Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Robert Yeager and the Tau Foundation.
The following encore presentation of the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze is a favorite from our archives. Hope you enjoy this second helping.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet, I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. We're going to talk about this catch-and-release thing that happened with a New York restaurant where they got these giant lobsters that are really, really old, and they said, we're not keeping these. They deserve freedom. They've earned freedom. And they let them go again. And so we're going to talk about that. This wild idea of serving watermelon instead of green salad, despite all the great things that are in the market right now. Why not? Just for freshness, and also because I'm crazy about watermelon. We have a great rosé that is so cheap. I think it's around $9 a bottle, that is perfect for a party, a bunch of people coming over, or that stuff you just whip out of the refrigerator because somebody stopped by. That's one of the things that we have. My treasured food buddies are here. Think about what's in the markets right now that we get to talk about. Senior contributors Chris Prosperi, Alex Province, and Mark Raymond. Robin Doyen Aiken is on the show with us, and she is our senior producer. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Faye.
All right. I can't help going to the Old Homestead Steakhouse in New York City. And this restaurant, I'm so proud of them because their purveyor came in with a 20-pound lobster.
Ooh.
Weirdly enough,
pounds.
You know, these fishing boats put out multiple traps, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unbelievably, there were 2 20-pound lobsters
the
same trap.
That's rare.
Probably from the same batch of eggs.
So they thought it was the Old Homestead Steakhouse would be so excited to have 2 of them. Like, imagine the publicity and the talk in the restaurant about. And the restaurant looked at these lobsters, apparently, and said, these lobsters are so old. They have lived so long. We want them returned to the Atlantic Ocean.
Beautiful.
And that's just what they did. So to the Old Homestead Steakhouse in New York City, that is so fantastic.
Can you imagine lobsters telling their friends later, like, you'll never believe
go to
it.
The Old Homestead.
I went all the way to New York.
Yep.
Yeah, sure.
It
was a great trip.
It was
in this tank.
And here I am. I'm back again.
Great vacation.
You should see the city.
I know.
That is really nice, though. Because
things are changing.
They don't get that big that often anymore.
They send us back now.
That's a really old lobster.
I don't know if they get that big.
Very rare you'll see them. I mean, 5-6 pounds that's big. 20 pounds,
that's huge.
I don't know what the meat is like.
It's not as good.
No.
It's too tough.
Yeah.
Too tough.
I would like to think that's not the reason they did this, because I think I would do the same thing. I would say, you live 20.
Yeah.
How many years would that be?
Who knows?
Because 50 years or something to get that big?
I don't know.
Next time you're in Mystic, they have big lobsters in there. They'll give you the age and how long it takes to get that big. Yeah. And it's.
But I can't stand when I go into one of these markets and they have a real old one in there just for the tourist or customer traffic coming in to look. Oh, it breaks my heart. I just think, are you kidding? It's like a nursing home for, a bad nursing home.
Oh.
Okay. Not big on goldfish bowls either, as you can probably tell. Okay, but let's get on to more pleasant topics. Watermelon as a salad. You've heard us talk on this show about chopping up watermelon with feta and olive oil and mint.
Yeah. Filling with vodka.
Filling them with vodka. That's you. That's you, Alex.
So quite some time ago, I was noticing in the Food Network magazine, this was months ago, where they floated this idea if you were having a party, and I want to give them credit because I thought this was such an intriguing idea, to cut a quarter of the watermelon for each person's plate and just leave it right in its skin and everything.
So you get a pie-shaped wedgie kind of thing.
Yeah. In other words, it's supposed to look like a wedge of iceberg lettuce. You know how that is kind of a triangle?
Sure. Yeah.
Then you would drizzle the dressing over the top of the watermelon. And it depends on what you think watermelon goes well with. Yeah. So their idea is to do a chunky blue cheese dressing and then to sprinkle on some bacon and chopped chives.
Oh.
I'm like, look what elegant.
That's just not fair. Once you put bacon on it, it just makes it absolutely incredible. I mean, it's you've made it the best dish ever.
But if you have vegetarians, I like to say,
then maybe
you
not
skip the bacon, and you go right to the blue cheese. But then you have the the vegans. I think they can't eat that either. But anyway, I would just put out watermelon instead of green salad. What's the difference?
That is a cool idea. I'm gonna try that.
Don't people put salt on watermelon in the South?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I've done that.
Yeah. But if you have bacon, you don't need the salt.
Ooh. Right.
You could have both. Mm-hmm. And the blue cheese.
And the blue cheese.
Some cracked black pepper.
I like where you're going with this. This is an interesting question. Why does blue cheese go with watermelon? Why does feta go with watermelon? What's happening with
sweet, sour,
strong?
Yeah.
And is there another cheese that would go with a watermelon? I wonder. I mean, could you put brie?
Too mild, maybe.
No, you could do
brie.
Goat.
I'm just going through.
How about Taleggio?
Yeah, Taleggio or goat might be
a little skewers with a little bit of Taleggio and a little bit of watermelon.
What about the Italian truffle cheese? How would that be with watermelon?
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know. You'd have to try it. We should test it.
I think we need a watermelon.
We're
going to
report. Okay. So how about now, as things are becoming ripe and starting to flood the markets? I mean, we have been trying so many different things, but isn't this an amazing time at farms and farmers markets when start to see things coming out like this and the corn?
It's like a still
corn is so good.
I take pictures of farm stands. They're so.
Do you?
Oh, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
It's true. We do that when we go to Europe. How beautiful to do that here.
Yeah, very good point.
Because the Europeans sometimes come here, especially to New England. They're snapping away. And we're over there snapping away.
Of course.
Their vegetables, our vegetables. Something to be proud of. California.
Something like a pile of grown vegetables. They're all regular and piled up. I mean, so out of a field right behind the stand.
The bounty of it,
right? The bounty. The safety.
So what's your story? There are people now who want to try things are getting now ripe and that they're at their fullest. September is the big time for the explosion, but now it begins.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not too bad now.
Okay. So for me, when it's like this, I like to start shaving fresh vegetables. In other words, if I take in the artichokes and I eat the outside leaves, which I like to do, and I get to the heart of the artichoke, or just cut into the heart of a fresh thing, you can make the most beautiful salad by shaving a raw artichoke heart.
Yeah.
And a mandolin?
Mixing it in a mandolin or with one of those.
Yeah, or even a peeler.
Yeah, horseshoe
peelers.
Whatever
you've got.
Yeah. You know, the ones that go the other way.
Yeah. Like you would use to peel a cucumber or a carrot. Yeah.
Now you drizzle that with a beautiful olive oil, those shavings.
That's all you need.
And then, wait. Then you put a little whisper of salt and a squeeze of fresh lemon.
There you go.
It is killer delicious.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
You know, now that's an appetizer that you could serve to people and they would go out of their minds. Just really, really incredible. So whatever you've got, you might want to try. If you shave it thin enough and then toss it with beautiful olive oil,
let it sit
a little lemon.
Let
it sit there, some salt and pepper. Oh, is that good?
Here's one for you. Take like a boule, have it sliced at the grocery store, throw it under the broiler, toast it, take a clove of garlic, grate it on the top, and then I do an heirloom tomato that are everywhere sitting on your counter. You just rub the tomato on it, a big heavy glug of olive oil, some sea salt, and have that for breakfast with a cup of coffee.
Mm. Ooh, that sounds good.
Sounds good. Alex, I remember that is how you grew up when you would visit Spain.
Eat it for breakfast every morning. And with the tomatoes sitting on your counter, it's so easy. You just cut a tomato in half and you just...
Can you walk us through it again? So you toast the bread first.
Big, nice piece of bread, whether it's sourdough or whatever. Huge slice under the broiler.
Or a baguette cut in half. Okay.
Then I take a clove of garlic.
Under the broiler.
And you can get a little burnt on the edges even.
Okay, out it comes.
Out it comes. A clove of garlic, peel it. Then I take the clove, and it's like you're using an eraser, and you just rub it on, and you'll watch the garlic disintegrate in your hand. Mm. You know, it like just disappears.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I take a tomato, cut it in half, a nice juicy tomato, and I just rub it all over, and you'll just end up with the peel left of the tomato. All the flesh, pulpy, liquidy stuff are all disappearing into the bread.
Did it so? Oh.
It just, you know, looks like a pizza at this point. And then you take a big, big glug. And I mean like how my Uncle Pepe does it. Like you pour on like a huge glug of olive oil. It's running over the plate.
Yeah.
It's soaking in. And then I love salt. If you don't like salt, skip this step. But I like big, huge crystals, and I just do the chunky salt all over the top. And then that.
Can I just grate a little bit of Parmigiano Reggiano?
That would be good. And it sounds strange, but coffee and that garlic like is a really great combination. Oh. Brush your teeth before you go to work. But,
yeah.
But so yummy.
Oh, that's so good. That I know you've talked about it before, but every time my eyes just pop out of my head thinking, I'm going to do that.
How can something so simple taste so good, right?
Just
a few couple ingredients.
Well, it's also like the fresh tomato pasta.
Yeah.
Instead of sauce, using the fresh tomatoes, a little bit of garlic, fresh basil. No,
lots of olive oil.
Yeah, no cooking anything.
No, yeah,
just cold. And you use like an immersion blender, just puree it a little bit.
What, the tomato?
I don't think you need to do it.
I don't either, Alex.
No,
just
fresh.
But I'd be interested to see what yours comes out like.
My mom makes a simple tomato, like a saute pan, glug of olive oil, a little sweat some onions, add the tomatoes, a little salt. And then
she's cooking.
Yeah, for a half hour only. It's like super bright and fresh. Mm. And then throws it in the emulsion blender and purees it. And that with pasta, it's like the simplest tomato sauce, but so fresh.
Is there a condo available next to her?
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm moving with you.
Okay. Alex and I are getting married. Okay. All right. So we're going to do a quick rosé wine for you, and it's a Bordeaux rosé. So this is created by the vineyard Chateau Bonnet. And so this is from the Bordeaux region of France. It is a Merlot Cabernet Sauvignon rosé, and it's made by the Lurton family, and they have had this vineyard for hundreds of years. So we're talking about 50% Cabernet Sauvignon and 50% Merlot. And they say serve it lightly chilled. We like it very, very cold. There's not a lot of fruit flavor coming off of this. It's just dry and satisfying. And it's about
refreshing.
$9. Refreshing, right, Alex? So it's about $9 a bottle. This is on our website, foodschmooze.org. And it's a gorgeous salmon pink in the glass, very pale and gorgeous. When you put together Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon, and it's from the Bordeaux region, what's going on there?
Just a Bordeaux blend.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's simple. So the Cab ripens a little later after the Merlot, so they plant several different varietals, and depending upon the year, but standard Cab and Merlot.
And how am I pronouncing this? Is it Chateau Bonnet as it looks, or Chateau Bonnet?
I think it's Bonnet.
Chateau Bonnet. Okay. Very good. This is a rosé Bordeaux wine. You're seeing, as we get more and more into rosés, aren't you seeing this? This, by the
Everywhere.
Way, would go with anything and is the perfect party wine to just pour.
If you
sit and have it on the porch by yourself, have a glass of wine.
At a picnic, get a galvanized like little bucket, fill it with ice, throw in a whole bunch of different rosés, and you know, let people talk and pour different ones.
Exactly.
Very refreshing and wholesome and nice.
Exactly. So this is 2016. It's on our website. Picture of the label, what you need to say at your wine store, call ahead. They can't stock everything. I'm sure they'll have it for you within 24 hours. Brescombe is the distributor. It says on the website. You don't even need to remember this. We love these chilled rosés.
Bring them to the beach if you're allowed.
Oh, yeah.
Time of year. And this is a screw cap.
It's a screw cap. So you can
love that. So
you don't have to perfect for the beach.
Haven't we tried to turn these into ice cubes?
Yes.
This would be a good one to turn into ice cubes.
Oh, Alex, I can't believe you said that. That is so smart. We're always looking for inexpensive rosés, and the idea is to keep them chilled in the glass. We've talked with you about this multiple times. And, you know, they start to get warm in the glass. They might be freezing cold when you first pour it in, but they warm up very quickly, especially in the kind of heat that this time of year brings. So because this is so inexpensive, around $9 a bottle, you can pour this into ice cube trays and make ice cubes. And when you serve either this one or even another one, put these rosé ice cubes in as you serve it. So it's ice cold, and then at the end, as you're walking around, stays cold, and then there's like this slushy thing at the bottom. Ooh. What a way to have this. It's so much fun.
And Chris, you said you would add 7-Up. This is the kind you'd add some 7-Up, some strawberries.
This is the wine I add soda to. Either soda water or 7-Up. This I would put 7-Up in this.
Or if you're going to make a little rosé sangria.
It's a European thing to do.
Yeah, and a little sweet in this one would just, right? I think I'd
be happy. Cuts the alcohol by half.
Good for a spritzer.
Yeah,
good
for a spritzer.
Yeah, you know, it'd be fun to play around with this and see what kinds of things you could put in it.
Fun.
Mm. You know, what would happen if you put in a little blood orange liqueur? What would happen?
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's so many kinds of things you could try.
Or some fresh berries.
You know, like, Alex, can we talk about this in the next segment? Because I know I want to talk to you about whether we could use rosé to make sangria.
Sure.
Okay, stay with us. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back.
Like sangria, your lips taste like sangria, your lips taste like sangria, your lips taste like sangria.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, "Now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
You can sign up for our free podcast. You just do it once, and then that means we send you a free copy of the show every week in your inbox. You don't have to do anything. Then you can listen on your schedule. That's the way podcasts work. It's at foodschmooze.org. I'm with my treasured food buddies, Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine broker Alex Province of Hartford, and our senior producer, Robin Doyon Aiken. As promised, I wanted to ask, can we make a sangria with rosé? Can we do a rosé sangria?
Oh,
Alex, you're the sangria expert.
Easy, easy. We can do two versions. A simple one is get a big container, add a little bit of sugar to taste, like a half a cup or a third of a cup, whatever you like. Add your bottle of rosé right in, and we're going to add some chopped fruit like apples or peaches or pears or lemon slices, orange slices, dump them in. And then you can top it off with some Italian soda or 7-Up or whatever kind of sparkling.
Why am I adding sugar?
Well, I think it just sort of, sangria people think of as slightly sweet. So I think it's...
But wouldn't the soda do that anyway when you put the soda in?
I am not a huge fan of sugar, so I would not add a lot. I would start with a couple tablespoons, a third of a cup, and then work your way up. But typically, the sangria you'd see in a restaurant would be made like this.
Okay.
And then the chopped fruit, you know, make them decorative and pretty, and you can use whatever catches your eye at the grocery store. And then add some ice, and I'd put that all in a nice pitcher and in a big wine goblets with citrus on the side of the glass, and that's simple sangria.
So you can make a rosé sangria. We know you can make a deep, dark red sangria.
And you know, the thing about rosé is, like I've been saying, all that rosé from $10 to $20, they're all delicious. So it actually takes sort of the guesswork out. You can just randomly pick one out, and they're all going to be good.
You know what I do sometimes? I'll take a white wine, right? We do white wine sangria.
Yeah.
And I add the soda and the fruit. And then right at the end, I splash it with a little bit of cranberry juice. So
it
I was just
color.
Thinking, it looks like the rosé one that I've made, but it just has a little splash of cranberry juice at the end. And I leave it at the top. And then as I'm putting it out on the in the pitcher, you see it kind of swirling down and blending. It's a pretty cool effect.
We have used Aperol before, remember?
Oh, yeah.
And that's always fun. Gives it like a little orange and some bitterness.
Mm-hmm. So Aperol is that Italian liqueur that has some unspecified number of herbs and botanicals and stuff in there, a secret.
Medicinal.
Is it usually beefed up with alcohol?
Yeah.
Like sangria?
You want a more complicated version?
Yeah.
How my dad makes it?
Do the brandy one.
Yeah. Okay. So now in a big stainless steel container, I'm going to add lots of fruit. And this is, you don't have to make this fruit pretty. It's just like for flavor.
And what kind?
I would use apples and pears and definitely limes and Meyer lemons and real lemons.
Cantaloupe.
And grapefruit. And
watermelon.
I would use stuff that has a rind that's sort of like full
peaches.
Of flavor. Peaches would work. Yeah. And I'm going to add brandy to the bottom of this and a couple tablespoons of sugar to help sort of like macerate and get all the juices going. Then I'm going to muddle it. So just take a wooden spoon and crush everything and get all the rind broken up. And stuff's going to look horribly ugly, but you're just trying to extract flavor. And then I'm going to put that in the refrigerator overnight, covered with plastic wrap, and let it all the flavor seep out. The next morning now, I'm going to strain this really flavorful concentrated juice into a pretty container. I'm going to add my pretty fruit that I've sliced, you know, artistically and nicely. And this is mostly just for appearances. So my lemons, my limes, other oranges. And then I'm going to add a wine, and it can be a simple wine, but it cannot be oaked. It's got to be an unoaked, simple, fruity style red wine, white wine, or rosé. Dump that whole bottle into this concentrate, and I would add some ice. And in this, I would probably use more like an Italian soda. I'm after less sugar and more just the bubbles, the effervescence.
Should you put in sparkling water?
Just sparkling water would be perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, club soda.
Club soda. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, that sounds really fun right there.
But now, hey, but give people a warning, though, because this stuff has brandy, so it's a lot stronger.
So can you then take that juice? So can you take sangria and freeze it and make sorbet?
Yeah,
will it freeze?
Yeah.
Would that work?
Yeah, the thing with sorbet is you have to make sure you have the right amount of sugar. That's the trick in freezing it so it doesn't freeze solid.
How does the alcohol affect it?
I think the brandy one might be a little trickier, but the wine one shouldn't be because the alcohol is so low.
Except that if we've got brandy in it, would this freeze solid or would it stay a little?
It would freeze solid. I'm assuming there's not a lot of brandy in it, right? Mm-hmm. It's not half brandy.
No, like a quarter cup.
Yeah, so it would freeze.
Oh, okay.
Freeze.
And will it be sorbet-like?
I think, again, it's all about that sugar content, right? I mean, there's all kinds of tests for making sorbet, like floating an egg. The egg tests the viscosity of the water, right? So the higher it goes up, the more sugar it has.
More
the
dense right?
Yeah. There's a device you can get to check the sugar, too, and then you freeze it just like you freeze ice cream in a little machine, you know, a hand crank or electric one.
If you put it in, a pie plate, would you then be able to just take a fork and keep scraping at it?
That's called ice.
To make
a granita. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So
that's probably the easiest way to
this
do it.
This is called reverse engineering.
Yeah, this is totally.
Sangria granita?
Yeah. So I would totally do the sangria granita.
And then I'd add some tequila.
Over the
and
top.
Call it margarita. Oh,
like you do the Italian ice, right? You put it in a cone and drizzle in tequila over the top.
Ooh.
An adult ice.
sounds great.
Right?
Who did I hear? Somebody the other day saying she was making champagne popsicles. And I thought, really?
Huh.
Will they freeze?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Rock solid?
Rock solid.
Wow.
Just like wine. Just like our wine
I'm so
cubes.
Afraid to take – I love champagne. It's my favorite thing to drink ever.
I wouldn't do
and
fancy
I think,
champagne.
Oh, my God, I
Cava
can't.
Prosecco.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. American sparkling.
Yeah, sparkling.
Yeah.
Okay.
$10. Right? Nothing goes
but then
in
the freezer.
We should make that as a thing.
Popsicles.
Nothing should go in the freezer that's more than $10, $12.
Yeah.
Right? Then they're the fancy ones and you know, it's a waste.
And I think if you pull those champagne popsicles out, you should probably have a toast also.
Yes. Tink, tink.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Our job promotion.
And if you listen to our podcasts, we start every podcast with a toast. And so if you need encouragement or if you need help coming up with
help.
A toast around food, we have you covered.
Mm.
Well, I wanted to ask the guys if when they make their sangria, they ever use instead of sugar, because it doesn't always dissolve so well. If you ever have maybe some simple syrup around from a night of making cocktails,
agave or something.
Yeah. Would you guys ever substitute that instead of sugar?
Yeah.
I know it's harder because then you can't really measure, but.
It'd probably be better. Less stirring, less worrying about it.
having to dissolve. So maybe people don't like sugar so much anymore, right? And just omit the sugar entirely.
I think you're responding to me. I'm interested in not having as much sugar if I'm eating this with my meal. And plus, you feel it the next day. If there's a ton of sugar in it, then it spikes your insulin, so you feel like you're going to be gaining more weight and all. So for a variety of reasons, I'm thinking, how much sugar do I want in there? I think the fruit's going to give sugar.
Yep.
The splash of soda is going to give sugar. Maybe if you're using bourbon in there, which would be really delicious now that I think of it. So anyway, but that's just me. Hey, idea for people coming over for breakfast. Do you remember going to breakfast joints and they would butter an English muffin and then put it on the cast iron grill?
Ooh.
Yeah.
And it would get browned.
No one butters like that anymore.
Remember?
Or muffins cut in half, buttered, and put on a grill. So both the top and the bottom are crusty.
And they would put a weight on it, and it would, so it'd get a little flattened, and it would get, you know, golden brown, soaked into the English muffin.
Heaven.
So I saw a recipe for making, you can duplicate this, making olive oil toast. You just brush the olive oil on bread. And then put that oil side down in the skillet. You could do it with regular bread. You could do it with English muffin, artisanal bread. And you just press something down on top of it, maybe the back of another pan.
Brick wrapped in tin foil.
And make this olive oil toast. And I thought, that is such a good idea.
It's a great idea.
I once did this, to be honest with you, in bacon fat. There was a woman.
Now you're speaking my language.
What about the sugar?
No, here was a...
yeah, no sugar, but give me bacon fat. Now that's it. Now, if I don't have sugar, I can have more bacon fat.
It's a trade-off.
Everything in life is a trade-off. And Faith, I'm with you on that trade-off. Get rid of the sugar, just up the bacon fat.
I did. I thought, you know, really, someone I knew was doing a bacon cookbook. So this woman was staying at the house, and I said, okay, I'm going to try something. And I took slices of Pepperidge Farm bread and sautéed them in the bacon fat and then cut them in triangles and said, okay, here we go. This
That's
is with
appetizer.
Our eggs and our...
So good, though. Tell me that wasn't the best toast you've ever had.
It was really good.
A little sprinkle of salt on
but
top.
You know what?
Make them sign a waiver.
I'd rather have the olive oil toast.
Did you put a little garlic in it?
No.
No.
No, I didn't.
No, okay.
Okay, so olive oil toast to bookend that. Can we do a cold summer soup? Vichyssoise, you know, the cold potato soup is with the chives, snipped chives in it. Is so
yummy.
I'm so excited because I planted chives. I really want to make this. I keep ordering it in restaurants when they have it, but I've never made it myself. So I think I would trust Jacques Pepin on this one.
Classic.
Classic recipe. Yeah. And the whole question for me will be, does he include a chicken stock in his vichyssoise or not? You say yes?
No question. Classic, yes.
Okay. And he has a cookbook where he's teaching his granddaughter, Shori, to cook. And so this cookbook features the two of them making things.
Good confidence builder, really. Because if a little girl, Shori, can cook something, certainly, you know.
We can.
Yeah. I can do it too then.
Well, she is related to Jacques, though.
Yeah.
I know, but DNA aside.
Yeah. Good bonding thing to do with kids.
It is a good bonding thing, unless you are a perfectionist.
Yes.
Because
I'm raising my hand. Kitchen's too clean.
Well, not just that, but so many times, kids will, they're very tactile. And if you're a person who thinks that in terms of cooking, if there's a right way to cook, there's a right method, there's a right technique, and you have an 8-year-old cooking with you, guess what? You have to let go of some of that perfectionism because they're going to do what comes naturally, and it might not be the thing that the recipe says to do.
And you can learn from them. Because the recipe will still come out, lo and behold.
You hope.
Right? No, usually they do.
What strikes me is how much kids are getting into cooking on their own because of all the shows, both on radio and television. A lot of kids have grown up sitting in the car at parents' instructions, listening to this show. They all know Beans and Cornbread. Oh, there's the sound of the city again. My great niece and nephew, who are twins, Teddy and Lulu, are so into all this that they play restaurant constantly. And so they opened a restaurant recently, and they said to their mother, Suzanne, would you review the restaurant? She said, okay.
My God, that's so
so
cute.
She wrote down a review, and she handed it to Teddy, and he picked up a fake telephone to his ear, you know, imaginary yeah. one, and he said, "Thanks, I'll fax that to all the newspapers." What?
I love it.
Where did he get that? Facts, but they are into it.
Yeah, there's
really
good cooking classes. I mean, just look on. There's kid cooking camps.
Well, you grew up
in the
cooking,
summer.
Right?
I grew up cooking, yeah, because that's just what we did in my yeah. house. I mean, yeah. in a European household, I think the kitchen's the living room. And the kitchen is.
It's where the life is.
It's wherever. Nobody's ever in the. I mean, it's funny because the living room was a place that you only went in like when we had company.
That's how I learned to love food and cook. Sitting on a stool, my aunt yeah. was a private See? Chef, and I would sit on a stool on all my vacations in her kitchen at her elbow and watch her cook. Yeah. And she was really good. And, she would make those brownies or whatever she was going to, jar, a glass jar yeah. of cookies, and I'd try and lift the lid without making any noise so I could get
it. Those are the best memories, though, right?
Right. I learned to love food, and my brother, too. Here's what we have coming up later in the show. Domenica Marchetti, who's an Italian food teacher. She's done many Italian cookbooks, and the new one is Preserving Italy. And this is about how to do the easy ways, preserve either in oil or in a vinegar bath, all the great stuff that's in the farmers markets right now. And in your supermarket, when they have local stuff, you can just throw those jars into your dishwasher to make them food safe. It's that simple. And then you put them in oil or whatever
Eat
she suggests with sugar or not sugar or whatever, and a couple of, you know, herbs and stuff. And you can eat it all winter. So she's going to tell us how to do it. We just tried some.
It's healthy, too.
And we're going to talk during that segment about peaches in grappa.
Oof.
We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Farmers markets are open everywhere right now for on-demand podcast delivery of the Food Schmooze Party every week. And to find our food, wine, cocktail, restaurant, hot topics, our short, fun streaming videos and recipes that we curate, we are always online talking with you at foodschmooze.org. And we'll be right back. The Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life, and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County and the east end of Long Island. That's the Hamptons, too, of course. The senior producer is Robin Doyen Aiken. And to hear the show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Podcasts and our curated recommendations are always online at foodschmooze.org. Hey, to those of you who are reaching out to us on Facebook, thank you so much. We love the conversations with you. People sometimes sending in pictures. We love to see the pictures that come along with your messages to us. Sometimes I blow them up, and because one was recently a cat at a fish market holding a giant fish in its mouth. It was the awesome. Most wonderful thing. I blew it up about 2 feet, so that was great. That's a Faith Middleton Food Schmooze on Facebook. Okay, here we've been waiting for this during the show. We are going to talk with Domenica Marchetti, who is the author of 6 cookbooks on Italian cooking. Her articles and recipes, perhaps you've seen them all around, Washington Post, Food and Wine, Fine Cooking, Cooking Light. She's also a cooking teacher and does stuff for various blogs, knows the Abruzzo region of Italy very, very well. Well, the cookbook that we became interested in, because we haven't really done this on the show, is called Preserving Italy. This is at our website. And Domenica, being generous as she is, has said, go ahead, take 3 of the recipes. We're going to get to them. Put them on your site. So that's foodschmooze.org. And when you hear them, I'm talking about peaches and grappa. When you hear them,
oh boy.
you are going to want to go to foodschmooze.org. So how do we can, cure, infuse, bottle Italian flavors and traditions in an easy way where we're not scared to death, we're going to be poisoned, or we're going to do it wrong, or, you know, take advantage of what's in the markets right now. That's the whole thing. Domenica Marchetti, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. So tell us what you wanted to get across from what the people in Italy do for us here.
I think life is changing. A lot of old traditions are in danger of being lost. And I really wanted to preserve some of these traditions in this book. The more I thought about canning and preserving and Italian food, the more I realized that it is integral to the Italian table. If you go to a restaurant anywhere, you will be brought cured meats, a preserved form of food, cheeses, which of course is the ultimate preservation of milk. You will be brought condiments in Abruzzo, which is where my family is from. They always put out peperoncini, either dried hot peppers or hot peppers in oil, peppers preserved some way. At the end of a meal, you're likely to get a house-made liqueur, another form of preserving food, or in this case, beverage, I guess. So all of these things are so important to Italian cuisine, and I really felt that you don't get the full picture of Italian cooking unless you incorporate preserved foods.
I love this very much, and I'll just want to make a point that this is different from what I'm about to describe. I think Martha Stewart is a genius, and anyone who knocks her for her talent is crazy. Having said that, I don't have time to make candles for my dinner party.
You don't?
So, no, I really do. I mean that compliment to her, and I mean, you know, people pick and choose according to what their lives are. So this is something else. This is something anybody can do. So let's start with the recipe that we have posted at foodschmooze.org. Your oil-preserved butternut squash with mint. And here we have the markets booming with this stuff now. And how do we take advantage of it? Not have it just in the summer, but pull it off the shelf? Tell me about this.
Yeah, so oil preserving is really popular in Italy. It's the most traditional way. Here in the U.S., we do a lot of vinegar pickles. And, of course, there's a new interest in fermentation. But in Italy, a lot of vegetables are preserved in oil, you know, eggplant, zucchini, and even winter squashes. One of my favorite flavor combinations is the mellow, sweet winter squash with vinegar and mint, you know, which really brightens it up. So the squash is just sliced and then kind of steeped in a sweet and sour agrodolce vinegar marinade. And then it is boiled in this marinade briefly just to make it a little bit tender. Then the squash is drained and kind of laid out to dry, packed in jars and filled with olive oil, and then just stored in the fridge. You don't even have to do a water bath or worry about canning it because the oil is a preservative and it keeps the squash nice and fresh for long-term conservation
so
in the fridge.
Yes, here is a thing that will last for 3 months. Think about that. If you do this in September, you can have even end
of
September, October, November, December. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. So, and these, you know, these wonderful sweet and sour squash pieces are so good with like a roast chicken, roast pork. They just make a nice bright side to classic winter fare.
But let me ask you some questions now, because this is what all of us want to know. Chris, do you have one to jump in?
Well, no, I just, you know, and it makes cooking easy. When you have this stuff already put up in your fridge, then you come home, you cook a piece of chicken, and what you're going to serve it with is pretty much already in your refrigerator.
The sides are already done.
Yeah, the sides are already done.
Yep, that's such a great point. I have to tell you, when I was working on this book, I mean, you should see, I have a fridge in my garage and a fridge in my kitchen, and they are both chock full of jars from recipe testing, and I will tell you honestly that some of these are way past 3 months old, but since I'm just serving them to myself, I'm okay. I'm not taking any chances. I have to say I was very conservative with the book in terms of dates, making sure you label everything and use by dates and all of that, because of course you don't want to put yourself at risk, but I always feel like if you follow a recipe, you roll up your sleeves, you do it, you're not going to have any problems.
Well,
people do get concerned about canning, and there are recipes that require water bath canning and even pressure canning in the book. But it's really something that I encourage people to try because there is so much payoff.
Domenica, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
About that very thing. This is oil-preserved butternut squash. When you start out with a jar, what is the easiest way to sterilize that jar?
You can sterilize them in the dishwasher.
I often put
them in the oven at 250 degrees for about 20 minutes, and all of that does
okay.
the job perfectly fine.
Great. All right. Now, in this recipe, oil-preserved butternut squash with mint, you explained how it has a little white wine vinegar in there. The butternut squash is sliced. There's a dried chili pepper, a little dried mint, some sea salt. And the oil used here is sunflower oil, because I was wondering, if I've got a good-sized jar with all this squash in it, what kind of olive oil am I supposed to buy? Because that's a lot of olive oil, and that starts to make this expensive. So you're using sunflower oil. Is that traditional to Italy?
Yeah, it is traditional to Italy. I will say that most oil preserves use extra virgin olive oil. And the reason for this is because many families in Italy, especially those in the countryside or those who have family out in the country, they have olive trees, and many
yeah.
families still make their own olive oil. So when they're pressing the fresh olive oil, that is the stuff that they will save to drizzle on bread and, you know, over tomatoes. And then they'll use what's left of last year's olive oil to put up preserves. Of course, we don't have, my suburban Virginia backyard, do not have an olive grove, unfortunately.
So can we use just regular olive oil?
I would suggest still a decent quality extra virgin olive oil. And you can find some good quality olive oils at places like Trader Joe's or Costco even. It doesn't have to be a $40 bottle of olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
But I would refrain from using the industrial sort of olive oil that won't improve the flavor of your preserves.
Okay.
That's why I also like to use sunflower oil, because you can find it at a decent price at many supermarkets.
Good.
And it's got a nice light flavor.
This is Domenica Marchetti, a cooking teacher and author of many Italian cookbooks. This one is called Preserving Italy, and it's about how to simply can, cure, infuse, and bottle Italian flavors. In other words, work in that tradition where Italians go to the market or to their own farms and buy a bunch of stuff. You see people buying bushels of things. Look at our markets right now. And then you put these up in jars and you get to use them. That recipe for oil-preserved butternut squash with mint is on our website, foodschmooze.org. Let's turn to another one. These are blue cheeseburgers. We just ate these, Domenica. They were delicious.
Oh,
and
great.
Chris, you made for us the tropia onion jam. Tell us what that was like.
I loved it. And it was so easy. It's just taking some red onions, mince it up with some sugar, red wine, a little bit of salt, some peppercorns, clove, bay leaf, vanilla, a cinnamon stick, and a little bit of red wine vinegar. And you basically bring that all, except for the vinegar, bring it all up to a simmer, and you cook this into a jam. And it's as easy as that. You finish it off with the vinegar and you put it in your containers. I did it a couple of weeks ago, and I've been eating off that container since then. It's great on ham sandwiches. We put it on a burger today.
Oh, yeah.
I've put it on chicken. I even put it on a piece of salmon the other night.
Oh, that sounds delicious. And yes, it's great as part of a cheese plate. Tropea is in southern Italy, and it's famous for its sweet red onion. So I called this tropea onion jam. Of course, I don't get those onions here, but right now in the farmer's markets, there are some really good red onions. They're still kind of on the small side, but even a supermarket red onion will do, because it has a nice assertive onion flavor. And when you cook it with all these lovely spices and a little bit of red wine, you know, the vanilla bean, the cinnamon. It's almost like a holiday flavor. So this is something that will last for a long time and that you can put out with a holiday cheese plate or like you guys did, on a Saturday night, make burgers and top them with a dollop of this jam.
Here's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about a baguette sliced, and I'm going to make a gorgonzola grilled cheese with this onion jam and, you know, a little butter on the outside of the bread. There you go.
So, does that ever sound good? Yeah.
So tell me this. And so that gorgonzola was in the burger that we made. You have a recipe for that burger in here. There is what normally we would consider a lot, 2 cups of sugar in this recipe to make this jam. And I was thinking to myself, some sugar would be good for caramelizing the onions. And but we said to each other, wow, 2 cups. What's behind that? Because you simply want it to be sweet, or is there another reason for that?
Sugar, of course, is a preservative, so it is a component in, the preservation of this jam so that it will keep for a good long while. And the other reason is that it helps, this is not a jam with pectin, so it does help to thicken the mixture into a jam-like consistency. So, it's funny. I hadn't even thought about the quantity of sugar until you mentioned it. This isn't something, though, that you're going to eat by, the spoonful or the cupful. It's a little dollop on your burger. It's a little dollop on a cracker with cheese. So a little goes a long way.
I'd put it on meatloaf.
Domenica does not know us.
Yeah, the part about not eating it by the spoon is debatable.
Yeah, exactly, Robin. You'll get to know us, Domenica. Okay, so here's the one we have been waiting for. Those are terrific. And we just had that blue cheeseburger from your recipe in the book, and we put that jam on it. It was fantastic. We did it both regular and gluten-free rolls. Oh, it was great. We then put a little bit of spice on there to work against the heat. It was terrific. So this, though, is the one that I am so excited about. It is peaches in grappa spiked syrup. Can you imagine pulling that off your shelf?
Put some ice cream on top.
That is holiday worthy. Okay, so here we go. This is, you say, the Italian version of bourbon peaches.
Yes, I live in Virginia, and bourbon peaches are very popular around here. But in my house, we make the Italian version, which means you use grappa instead of bourbon as your, spiking agent. So the peaches are just kind of quickly poached in a little bit of boiling water so that you can slip off their skins. And then you slice them up and you make a sugar syrup, with water, vanilla bean, a little bit of lemon juice. And you pack the peaches in jars, pour the syrup on top, and then you top it off with a good glug of grappa. So you have a really nice liquor-spiked syrup, and these peaches just kind of steep in there for a while. And yes, whoever mentioned ice cream, this is a perfect use for these peaches.
And these seal them up for 6 months.
Yes, because
in the refrigerator?
Through a water bed.
Well, if they're open in the fridge, they'll keep for a month.
Yeah, they will keep even once you open them. And the jars are quart-sized jars so that you can fit a fair bit. But if you're having company for dinner, you'll go through a jar for sure, for like
per person.
People. Yeah.
Calling an Uber afterwards.
You know, this is a little bit of taunting, I realize. But from time to time, we do get our hands on peaches. And so if you do and you want to carry that gorgeous fruit through into the winter months and the holidays, what a way to do it. And I'm so grateful, Domenica, that you have said, go ahead, post this on the website for our folks. You'll find this recipe, peaches and grappa spiked syrup, makes 3 quarts. What a gift, by the way.
And yes, great point. Perfect for holiday gifts.
And now is the time, right, to start getting going on that. So that's at foodschmooze.org. So we have about a minute left to the end of the show, and I just want to say that in here we have how to put up classic meat sauce, green tomato preserves, doing an apricot mustard sauce, doing plum preserves, that jar of vegetables that is so traditionally Italian, tomato sauce, just like Domenica's garage. You can have all these That's our Domenica's garage between two covers is what we've got here. Thank you so much for being on the show and for taking the time to share this tradition with us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Again, these recipes, the three we just mentioned, are on our website at foodschmooze.org. The book is called, and you'll see text about the book and how to get it. It's Domenica Marchetti, our guest, Preserving Italy, Canning, Curing, Infusing, and Bottling Italian Flavors and Traditions. Was that?
Oh, my gosh. I need a second refrigerator.
I know. I do, too. That's what I keep saying. I'm not getting that, though. Well, maybe I will.
As Santa.
All right. We are on WNPR Thursdays at 3, Saturdays at noon, weekdays. Listen for my 60-second food schmoozes. Never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. Hey, don't want the party to end? Well, neither do we. Talk with us anytime online at foodschmooze.org.